Let's get some Spark games. Okay.
Yeah, Mike's out here. Familiar.
Are you guys on Twitter?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, we've been talking to you guys a little bit on Twitter every once in a while.
All right, great. So, great.
Yeah, I hopped in. I think I just plunged myself into the middle of the your guys' kind of group Twitter love and conversations, and so I kept following people as they appeared in conversations, and was like, okay, well, we're just going to start talking to these people who seem really inclusive and really great. And
that's how it's going.
Yeah,
Chris does like 90% of the Twitter. I do a little bit of it, but. Yeah. Like when I do stuff, he doesn't always know about it, so I'm like, oh, wait, I didn't know.
You signed us up.
I like that you have your own Twitter now, so that when you message me, I know who is messaging me.
All right.
I did want to get Twitter, but
pretty good shape here.
Twitter's better than Facebook.
You know what? You really think it is. I didn't think that for a long time.
Can we go around the room? Give me a check. 1, 2, 3.
Check 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 1, 2, 3.
Okay, and check 1, 2, 3. Okay.
I
want to
get that one.
Oh,
if you do podcast, your voice just turns
up. Yeah. Well, yeah. Me sound the same most of the time. Rob turns on a podcaster voice every time we record.
I can't help it.
You mostly just use the podcaster voice when you do the intro.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, we're looking pretty good. Well, we might as well go ahead and get started here. Hey, listeners out there in podcast land, thank you so much for downloading the show and listening. As you probably know, I am Rob from Building the Game, and as usual, I'm hanging out with Jason.
Hey.
And we are at Gen Con 2013 right now. We're hanging out in a hotel room, and we're doing one of our phones on silent, please. It was you, fail. We're doing one of our game designer roundtable nights here in the room, and we have some excellent guests with us here tonight. If we can go around the room and tell us who you are and what you're doing here.
My name is Jay Sparks. I'm one of the members of Sparks Games. It's our first con as a company, my first personal con, and we brought our first product, Tau, and it debuted today. Today was the first day it went on sale ever anywhere, debuted today, and that was pretty interesting.
That's very exciting.
I'm Cooper Livingston. I'm also with Sparks Games. It's my second con, but I'm kind of bringing them all along for the ride. It's the first time I've come with a company instead of just an attendee. So.
Great.
I am Chris Zinsley, one half of Cardboard Edison, this is my first Gen Con.
Right on.
Hi, I'm Suzanne Zinsley, the other half of Cardboard Edison, and we're here, our publisher, Van Ryder Games, is doing tournaments of our games, Hessen, so we're here to help him out with that.
Great.
Mikey Jones, other half of this one, next one that's about to talk. We don't really have a game, a company name, so we're just...
You're much like
us. For the ride, first con.
You guys are aspiring game designers.
Yeah,
right?
And harassing you guys as much as possible.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good job at that.
Podcast harassing.
I know, we're the groupies.
And I'm Anissa Jones, and this is also our first Gen Con, so we're super excited to be here.
Yeah, we've got a room full of newbies. Cool. Well, thanks again, everybody, for hanging out with us, and we appreciate that. And so, we want to keep this kind of informal tonight. For you guys, your first Gen Con, your exhibitors here, you're starting out. Oh, we got some new visitors rolling in, too.
No.
Uh-oh. We got Trevor walking in the door. Come on in, guys.
I was about to say, the way Jason and I reacted there.
Look at this room.
Save your seat, Jimmy. It's right next to you.
I just figured you're so
tired. All right, we can start.
Okay. Thanks, AJ. Just joining us here, we have AJ Porfirio from Van Ryder Games, and we have Mr. Chevy Dodd. So welcome, guys. Thanks for hanging out.
Thanks for having us.
But I was talking to our guys from Tau, right?
Yes.
Yeah, tell us about Tau.
Tau is basically a role-playing storytelling game. It's made to bridge that 25 minutes from when Joe calls your game group to say, I'm stuck in traffic, I have to go to the grocery store, whatever, till he can show up and play the game of the night. And it's meant to keep everyone at the table, not checking cell phones and turning on the TV and smoking outside. We've basically taken a fantasy character, smothered him into 52 regulation playing cards. It is a regular deck. You can play poker, spades, hearts, whatever with this deck. You need a deck of many things, you have it. You need a Malfo Fate deck in a pinch, you have it. It's a regular deck. And then what we do is there's a card distribution phase. You can handle that however your group wants to handle that. We include a spades-like trick-taking game. After that, you go into a storytelling mode. It's all narrative. There's no character sheets. There's no dice. There's no hard mechanics. And you play those elements of your character to back up your telling of the narrative against the storyteller, who's trying to eliminate you all as expeditiously as possible. He only has about 25 minutes to work with, as uh-huh. it is. And you're trying to be the last one standing. If you're the last one standing, you win a high five, a handshake, a Mountain Dew, whatever it is. And then you shuffle up the cards and play again, if you have the time. So it's really a niche kind of game. It's a Swiss Army knife kind of thing that you throw in your gamer bag, and we're selling it for $10 at Gen Con, so it's one of those things where it's just, like I said, it's a Swiss Army knife. You throw it in there, it's useful, it's something that we think contains a lot of value, and we're trying to get it out there to gamers as a service and build that community of people using something creative like that.
Cool. That sounds great. Now, how's it been going? I mean, we're done with day one here. Your first day, first time ever selling games. How's it going?
It's been great. It's been really positive. I mean, I think we did Cheese Weasel this year as a new company, as a startup company, and that's been good and bad. It's been good because we have driven people, but you've gotten some disinterested, just punch my card kind of people. Mm. Aside from that, I mean, we've had just about 100% interest rate in the game. We know Thursday's a big window shopping day, so we are hoping a lot of those turn around and come back. But it's been really, really great. Our demos, we had two demos planned. We ran a third one impromptu today, and all of them went swimmingly. We also have an event going on along with it. We're doing a real-time ladder of people playing games. And it's basically you can play any game you want. You can play rock, paper, scissors, coin flip, whatever. You wear one of our lanyards. You see someone else with a lanyard. You say, "You're in Sparks Games Ladder. Play me in a game." And I don't access an ally, so I don't care what you play, as long as there's a head-to-head winner. And then we keep a real-time website. We're keeping a real-time website of the ladder. Winners and losers, winning percentage, everything is calculated real-time. And the winner is going to get a 2014 Gen Con badge and a huge 42x54 poster of our artwork that's signed by all of us and our creators and everything. Cool. And so we're really just trying to hit the ground with a splash, hit it running, and get it out there. And today was awesome. We were on Board Game Geek's preview page, and we literally had people walking up to our booth saying, "Don't talk, just sell me the game. I saw it on Board Game's preview. We want it." And it was like, "Okay, I don't know how to handle that, but yes, here you go." So it's been really good. It's been awesome, awesome turnout, awesome interest and feedback, and it's been good.
Excellent. Great.
Sorry to be so long-winded.
That's all right. Really. Freaking Joe, by the way. Does everybody have a Joe? Is there a Joe in every game?
Every single game. Yes.
Hey, dude, I'm my mom. Okay, Joe.
Yeah.
Thanks, buddy.
Everybody knows Joe.
Joe. We all have one.
Yeah. Yeah, so what's everybody been playing? What's everybody been doing today? What are you guys excited about? What was impressing you guys today?
There's beer.
There's beer if you guys want beer.
Yeah. Some color.
We have a lot of options.
I'll grab some beer. You guys talk about games.
Best host ever. Is there beer being a real podcast today? Like, when you guys work together, is there beer?
There used to be.
I might drive out.
You listened to the show. Because
you don't talk like you used to. You don't talk about beer.
Then they had me on, and I had my beer ready, and I was like, "I know what beer this is. A great beer. I'm going to talk about the beer."
It didn't bring
Not
up.
Once did they ask me.
I was an agent.
We're doing FaceTime.
Right.
It's not like they don't see me drinking my delicious beer.
It's probably to the point where she was like,
"I like wheat."
In front of the camera.
We got oatmeal stout. That's an excellent stout. That is, what is that?
Looks stout. Do you like amber?
Gosh, we've got all stouts
that's
here.
That's not stout.
Give him Alaska.
Give him Alaska
amber.
He can have a
wheat
and I'll have a stout.
Yes, I'll take one.
I got it. We got
here,
it.
We got this.
Where's the good stout?
Thank you, sir.
Oh,
they're all good.
Do you want the whiskey barrel one?
Yes.
Dragon's
Yeah.
They're all
yes.
good.
Dragon's Love is phenomenal.
That one's, yeah.
Where are you guys at?
You might not be able to walk out.
364, we're over by Family Fun and okay. the Board Game Geek. We're in that back corner.
Yeah, that's not a lot.
It's your opener.
Good stuff, man. It'll hit your heart. 10% alcohol. By
Anyway, back to games.
It kind of tastes like a whiskey barrel.
Yeah.
They age it in those, so.
Anyway, back to games.
Back to games.
What you guys been playing today? Anybody?
We have been playing Kill the Overlord.
Kill the Overlord.
That was the recent demo that we did. We were impressed because we came specifically looking for either two-player games because it's Mikey and myself. or a five-player game, and we have three kids. So it had to fit, like, these two specific niches, and they're kind of hard to fill for us. At least the five players, those can be harder, because it has to be able to curve with our youngest. And we all have to enjoy
it. Not too much. I mean,
she's able to pick up things really well. She's seven. So if it says, like, 10 and up, she's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I throw my four-year-old into all kinds of games that he's totally not ready for.
Yeah. Yeah. We've got a few. We play Citadels with our two oldest.
Our nine-year-old.
Yeah. And our nine-year-old is vicious. She figures us out within a couple minutes.
Well, she's like, I'm killing the king. Yeah, she throws in strategies you don't even think about.
Yeah.
I'm like, I didn't even know I could do that in this game.
We're checking the rules.
she's got that one on.
I threw my 4-year-old into Takenoko the other day, and he just ate it up. I mean, the basis for it and everything, he just totally ran with it and was so excited.
That's the panda one?
Yes.
Yeah.
I liked when you, after playing with his children, he then showed me how to play the game. And we're sitting out playing it, and he showed me objective cards. He goes, oh, my kids call this one the Nibblies, and this one's like the tall one. And I'm like, oh, that's adorable. These kids really get all of it.
They called it that all night. That was the best
part. We really had to resist from buying the special edition of that, the big
$300
one.
$300.
Yeah, only
the nice yeah, it's, I mean, it's the panda's like
it's
this big, and the
gorgeous. The
stalks are really tall.
Like a foot by a foot. I mean, yeah.
Oh, man. It's,
wow. it rivals the Catan. Special one.
Yeah, it was
like that type of coolness. Yeah, the Catan was like $400 though, wasn't it? Or $450.
Not long ago, we played Salmon Run with our daughter, who's 4.5, and she beat us. First game.
Yeah. Were you as vicious as you could have been with the bears, though?
We were playing at full strength.
We were
playing.
I can't believe you admitted that.
Yeah. I know. No, we took the bear cards out.
You think you're such a good gamer until your little kid wipes the floor with you. Yeah. And you're just like, oh, clearly I don't understand this at all.
Right.
I just got done playing two games of Space Cadets and Dice Duel back-to-back. And I believe I'm going to need to carb up for the next session. Like, that game is ridiculous. AJ played the second game, and it's just nonstop madness. Very cool game.
Hey, tell us more about that.
It's a real-time dice game, so it's very much like... It's an honor system game. Like, you could just make stuff up if you want. But it scales from, like, 4 to 8. And because you're, like... So you have these little stations of your spaceship. So you've got, like, the helm, and that's the guy who drives the ship. And you've got missiles, and that's the guy who loads the missiles. And so you split those roles up to whoever. And so each of the stations has a number, 1 through 6, on it. And you have these energy dice that you roll. And as you roll those numbers, you can assign them to the station. So if you want to... Like, the helm is 5, because I've just played the helm. So if I need helm dice, I tell the engineer, like, dude, I need 5s. And so he's over there rolling a pile of dice trying to get me 5s, while the missile guy's rolling a pile of dice trying to roll a missile. And then I'm getting my energy so I can roll a move. And then whenever you get a die, so, like, he gives me a 5. So that means I can roll 1 of my helm die.
Okay.
And then whenever I get a result I want, I can lock it and give him the energy back, and then he can keep going.
Mm.
But if he gives me, like, 3 energy 5s, if he gives me 3 5s, I could be rolling 3 dice at a time trying to get what I want. So there's only so much dice to go around, but everybody's just like mad. They're like, I need 4s! Oh my god, give me 4s! I'm shooting my body! And then you got this board, and you're moving around this board trying to shoot the other ship, and there's like...
Uh-huh.
And so when you move, it's kind of like Robo Rally. You lock in your movement, so you have these 3 slots, and then you have to do whatever it is. And so it's a frantic game anyway, and you're like, crap, I just ran through an asteroid and lost all our shields because I'm an idiot. Not that I ever did that.
That was the other game.
That was when Grant was at the helm.
Yeah, it's a very chaotic game.
It's cool, though. Like, it's a weird game. I think it would take the right group, because if Joe shows up, Joe's going to be like, well, how did I know that you didn't cheat? Like, Joe, shut up. Because you could totally just...
I think what added to the fun was we're playing on is either granite or marble or something.
Yeah,
the dice are like flying off the table.
So you're like trying, you're knocking stuff over. It was awesome. But I'm seriously gonna have to carve up for my next session. That was like exercise.
Yeah,
there was a game like that we had. It was the first demo of the day, wasn't it? Escape. That we saw.
Very similar.
And that was the same. I had a similar sort of question as far as, you know, well, this is really honor system, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
you know, if I'm feeling particularly drunk or scumbaggy, I can totally just cheat my way through that.
So, like, you've been playing these, your kids trying not to lose?
Yeah. Oh, God, I crush it every time.
Yes, I rolled all of those.
Yeah. No, Ethan, I did not lie. You better not have.
We got to play yesterday. Rob and I got to play Vegas.
Yeah.
The dice game where, you know, you lay out, there's like six casinos. Yeah, six, because yeah, there's six sides of the die. And you roll, there's money in front of the casinos. You're trying
that's
to get
James
that money.
Nervous? Is he one of the
I'm not sure.
I don't know.
James, is that where you build your casino with the tiles?
No. It's just
a Vegas showdown. Vegas showdown.
You're just taking and putting, you're just putting dice on there, trying to get the most of whatever number you have. And then you win that money, and you play four rounds. I think it was really fun. There's a lot of strategy in it for being such a simple, easy to learn game.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah. So we're talking here about game design. So let me throw this question out here. What game do you guys wish you had designed? What are you jealous of, and why? Let's do one of those terrible interview questions.
That's a great question.
I'll start.
Sure.
So,
AJ?
Betrayal at House on the Hill is one of my favorite games. That or Tales of Arabian Night, both just because to create the scenarios is a massive undertaking.
Can you imagine writing that book?
But I love that stuff. So, like, if I had the time to do that, man, and was that good of a writer,
Harkens back to me as a kid with, like, Choose Your Own Adventure.
That's
one of the reasons why Tales of the Arabian Nights appeals to us so much.
And, you know, obviously the common complaint is it's not really a game, because, which, whatever, by the third round you won't care if it's not a game, it's so fun.
I'm enjoying it, it's fun, it's a game.
Yeah. And there's still a win condition you can work towards.
Exactly.
I mean, there's still a definite ending. It's not. There's another game that we have been playing lately called Fabula, which is... it's really pretty, but it's not a game. I mean, you've got one person that's subjectively deciding essentially who wins, you know. So if my daughter's playing it, she's like, "Daddy, you're so ridiculous." You know, she gives me those eyes, and, you know, it's a guarantee.
Hey, welcome, Paul.
Yes,
hey.
Paul, nice to meet you guys.
I'm Rob.
Nice
you.
Welcome.
Rob.
Hello.
Yeah. We have a... I'll let everybody
see
themselves.
There's a seat over there, I
think. Okay. I think that space over here.
Jason would love it if you'd sit between us.
We've been joined by Paul...
Tseng.
It's Paul Tseng, and Paul is another one of the finalists in the Tabletop Deathmatch, right?
Yes.
Hey, congratulations.
We'll ask you about your game, which is...
Outer Earth.
Outer Earth, thank you.
Yeah.
We'll ask you about that in a second. Right now, we're talking about games that we wish we had designed.
Oh.
Ones we could take credit for.
Sounds good.
And we were just talking about Betrayal at House on the Hill or Tales of the Arabian Nights.
Yeah, sort of scenario driven, story driven games.
Yeah.
What else? What else we got?
I'm super late to this party, and like I said, I got into game design kind of before I was fully playing a lot of games, and so I'm getting into all these things late. He's like, Cooper's educating me. He's like, "Here, play this." And I'm like, "Oh God, this is the greatest game ever." And he's like, "No, not play this." And I'm like, "Oh, this is the greatest game ever." But Dominion just recently ate my brain.
Yeah.
And going through all of the new cards and always finding new combinations, and then finding Goko online and taking off my entire family because I'm staring at the computer, clicking, playing base set Dominion online for free, you know, ruining days on end. But that game to me right now is just, it's speaking to me and the way it works and how, you know, but again, talk about a massive undertaking. Every single one of those to come out with a balanced set of 500 cards at a time in such volume and everything else is just, it boggles my mind and it's spawned so many other, you know, tribute games that it's obviously, you know, a seminal moment, a watershed moment.
Absolutely.
For that. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to the very other end of the spectrum and say
Monopoly.
Colorado.
I wanted to say
Colorado
that.
Is the one game that when I played it, I thought, wow, this is the simplest game I've ever played, and I'm the most engrossed I've ever been in a game.
Yes.
Why didn't I think of this? And it, there is no component overload. There was no a massive development undertaking. It was a deck of colored cards, and you flip one over and put it down, and that's the game. And it, every time that decision is the worst decision you've ever made. It's like, I don't know what to do. That's the game. Like, I aspire to that. It's like Zen. It's like, it's perfect. I don't know.
Yeah. It's Colorado or?
Colorado.
So you never played? No, I haven't.
Zuloretto?
No, I don't know.
Basically the same game. There's a deck of cards, and there's like seven colors. That's it.
you flip over a card and you either put it on a stack or you take a stack. Stack can only have three cards.
Okay.
That's the game. And then you score. And it's, so it's a set collection, but you only score your top three colors, and you lose negative points for any other colors. So you really are trying to like stack the set for you while your opponents are like, I drew this crap card I don't want, so I'm going to put it on this thing that I think you want, but maybe you don't want it because you're going to take this to keep me from getting it. What? All you do is flip one card, and that decision is the worst decision ever. It's just like, ugh, it's so awesome. It's such a good game.
Yeah. Great.
I'm kind of also in the boat of quite new to board gaming, but if I would say one game that I've really enjoyed is Race for the Galaxy, just the base set, because I really have a lot of fun with that, and it's something that pulled me in with the mechanics, the theme really worked with it also, and I just felt like if that was the game that I designed, I would be like,
yeah,
that's nice. Good.
Yeah. It's a good game.
Cool.
About you guys,
I stole the Edisons.
Right.
Well, we got along now.
We do this every week.
Since he's already said Colorado, here's another game that's kind of in the same so simple but so good category. It's Hanabi, cooperative game. Just numbers on cards. You try and get as many of them on the table as you can. That's it. You know, you give some clues, or you discard, or you play a card. Those are the only choices. But it's just this awesome.
Yeah.
I want to play that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, well, cool. Well, Paul, you and I are finalists in the Tabletop Deathmatch.
Back we are.
How terrifying is that?
I'm scared. I need to present tomorrow. And, just the pitching part, the Q&A, you know, you're going to get grilled, obviously. And, it's just going to be terrifying, but a really good experience.
Yeah, it's exciting, but it's also terrifying.
Yeah.
So you're pitching tomorrow. I'm not pitching until Saturday.
Pitching tomorrow, yes.
Yeah, and so I have a whole other day to
be terrible.
Are they? They're not deciding here at the con, or
Do you know when they're?
No,
they're not telling us anything.
Apparently, there was no rules.
Good.
There was nothing. Yeah, I didn't even know for sure when my pitching and my interview schedule was until yesterday.
Yeah.
Have you lose? You actually die?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a chance.
I don't know.
After your pitch, like you'll know if you're good or bad because it'll
thumbs down.
You win. Yeah, like that scene in with Gladiator stuff and thumbs down.
They didn't tell you, but the pitch process is a lot like the Hunger Games.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'm trying to think of other clever and interesting questions, and nothing's coming to mind.
Well, what's your game about?
There we go. Tell us about it.
So I'll give you guys just a quick summary. So pretty much the game is called Outer Earth, and each player is playing a planetary development company that is developing and kind of like capitalizing, I wouldn't say capitalizing, but launching new planets into the market. So you're competing against each other in an auction, and then you have to develop these planets and then kind of capitalize on them. And as you complete planets, there's also a stock market that everyone is affecting. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the game, everyone gets scored according to that stock market also. So you get points for your planets that you develop, but you also get points for other people's planets in the stock market.
You're way too smart for us.
How do you handle the stock market mechanic? I mean, how is that handled in the game?
Pretty much, planets have three different types. So a primary, secondary, and tertiary planet. So when a primary planet gets completed, it moves a stock marker one up. So it's about...
Did they ever go down?
That is actually thoughts for a expansion, or just like interactive expansion where you'll be doing a lot of market manipulation.
Okay.
But for the just base, like,
right,
you need to understand the game. Like, here, you need to draw cards, you need to use action points to get more cards, to increase your planet capacity. So it's,
yes, it will have
as long as I don't have to break out a calculator.
Numbers between 1 and 3, and it's really easy.
Jason will be making Excel spreadsheets to
do. I don't want to do math.
I find stock markets and stuff really intimidating, and just the idea of trying to come up with that myself just scares the crap out of me.
Yeah.
Like, when I played Mars Needs Mechanics last year, and it was brilliantly simple, but the idea of getting it to that point is terrifying to me.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and so that kind of idea, I just don't even know how to begin with that conceptually to create that from nothing. So that I have a lot of respect for that.
I attempted it last year and failed horribly.
No surprise there.
Actually, so my game was like, and it was this tile game, so you're buying tiles, right? And as more got bought, the price went up because they became more rare. And so if you took a tile and you didn't want it, you could sell it and somebody could pay you whatever the current... So it was this whole thing. Mm-hmm. Now, it just costs one. Like, I just just pay $1 and you get the tile. Like, I don't even screw on that. I couldn't figure it out. It was like, yeah. It was this convoluted mess. It's just everything costs one.
Any kind of fluctuating value scale. We have a project working on that, a trading game, and it's kind of right now we're using household items as placeholders. Yeah. We don't know if that's going to be the final result. But, same thing, as soon as you try to lay that valuation overlay on it, all of a sudden the math corner of your brain just goes, ow, like really hurts me in my temple right now. And you take it off and you're like, oh, this is way better, but it doesn't have quite the same pull to it. So it's one of those give and take, how do you make that work kind of moments, you know, in design. Yeah. So,
What do you guys like about game design? What got you excited about it? I mean, is it scratching itch for you? Is it just... What is it? I think we probably all have very different things that really get us going. So what are your triggers? Or what gets you excited about it?
Being on a podcast.
Yeah.
Especially this one, right? I'm terrible at everything else.
Yeah. Like,
I'm going to design a game and a bunch of people are going to ask for me to talk. So. Yeah.
Seemed like the easiest way in.
No, I think just seeing
that's
other
people
smile.
That's why you design a new game every day.
Seeing other people smile is like the best part. Seriously. And it might even be like they're smiling because I'm, you know, raging over a prototype I just threw out and it completely crashed and burned. And I'm like, all right, we're done with this. And they're like, no, I want to play. Like, no, it's horrible. And even that smile is fine. Like, they understand that I'm going through something too and the game's not what I want it to be. I don't care what you want it to be. It doesn't matter to me. I'm designing this for me, and so if I can get a smile out of somebody, I think that's worth everything in the world.
Excellent. That's a pretty good reason.
Well, I guess I enjoy really just looking at a game and seeing what I like about it and what I don't like about it. Like, the analyzing of a game is something that I had a lot of fun with. Like, in my thesis for graphic design, I actually analyzed Tetris, the video game, and I looked at the scores of, like, how it exponentially goes up and how fast the block starts falling, like, as you score more points. And it's just really interesting how this really simple game has, like, all of these complex mechanics of, for example, you get exponentially more points when you score, like, multiple Tetrises, and it's just really interesting to analyze games, I feel.
Who invited the smart guy?
You know what?
I think you got the beer.
I honestly feel like that's where I started. Like, game design in my history, in my head, is really came from building magic decks. Like, sitting down and analyzing magic decks is when I started designing games. Because you basically are. That's what you're doing. You're building a game that you play by yourself against somebody else.
Same thing with D&D. Like, I grew up in D&D. Yep. Being a dungeon master, you're creating a game. I mean,
Well, and every house rule is game design. Yep. I mean, you come up with a house rule, and you're saying, well, these rules are incomplete, and I need to make it better.
Make them better.
And I'm going to make it better in this way. And when your players enjoy it, and it becomes a house rule, then you've successfully modded Dungeons & Dragons. And so, that's how it works, you know? And I think for me, and I know at least for Cooper and I's interactions as gamers, it was always... We would finish playing a game, and the whole time you're playing the game, you're not discussing anything except the rules and the play and everything else. You're trying to win, and you're doing everything. And the moment it ends, the moment the win condition is met, we both look at each other and go, "Here's what I would have done." And it's like a rush to get that. Here's what I would have done first, so that we can both talk about it and discuss and rehash it up. And it's not that the game is bad. It's just that. My interest goes this way, my brain goes this way. What if? What if you tried this? Holy cow, what if you took this? And then we always get 90 steps ahead and we have to come back 88 of those steps before we can get to any kind of thing that we want to do. But just that rush of information when you finish a game for the first time of how you would do it different, how you do it better or whatever, to me it kind of speaks to the heart of game design as far as, you know, where that is and where that driving force comes from.
I just do it for the money.
You know, loads of money in game aside.
Yeah.
To me, and not to disagree with you, Jay, but for as long as...
Right, like, you preface that.
Get there first. Get there first.
Right, no. But for as long as I've been playing games, storytelling games have been a big part of my life. Games with a narrative have been a big part of my life. And when I design a game, it is actually the player-created narrative that comes out of it that really drives me to make a good product. Because you know when you're designing a game and you take it to your first prototype session or whatever, and the people walk away from it, and the next day they go, do you remember when this happened? And it was, and it's suddenly creating a story, like the just baseline mathematics and everything that you've worked so hard on, and said, well, this is imbalanced and this is, and then you get these players who have no idea that any of that's going on behind the scenes, and they play that game and all they want to talk about is the story, the narrative, exactly what happened, how it felt. That's what makes me feel good about designing a game, and that's how I know I've really done it well.
So. You know, I struggle with storytelling games. I always have, because when I sit down and play a game, I kind of feel like I want to reach an end point that we all have agreed on. And so often, a storytelling game, the end point is the goal that you invent as you play. And I struggle a lot with that. And a lot of storytelling games that I've played require a lot of trust, I guess, you know? Like, the rules say... basically say, don't be a jerk about it. And I have a hard time not being a jerk about it.
That's the truth.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. So I'm tortured with storytelling games.
To me, in a storytelling game, you're right. Everyone does have the potential to be a jerk because they are much more open-ended rules-wise. Which
yeah,
one of the things I like. But the thing is, if you want to go into a storytelling game and be a jerk, you've got 3 to 4 other people who can bring that right back on you because the rules don't penalize them either.
Yeah,
and so
true.
through experience in playing these games, eventually the group you're with will train you not to do that, I think. Because, sure, once or twice you can squeak by with it and, you know, do something that's really unkind to the group as a whole, but eventually they will just either hate you out very early and just, you know... rail you out of having any real control over the story, or do something else to make you realize that behavior doesn't contribute to what they're trying to find in the game.
I think it's an interesting balance, because you were talking about Tau and how there's an end point. You know, you're trying to eliminate people, and I think of a game like... So a game like that, I like that, because I like storytelling, but I do struggle with, like, Rob said, like, we play Fiasco a couple times, and I love Fiasco, and in Fiasco, to be a jerk to everyone is great, because... you know, when it gets to your turn and you're like, all right, I get to decide what happens, I'm going to be really mean to Rob. Because I don't care if he's mean back to me, because there's no rules.
Yeah.
You know, there's no... it doesn't matter. We just want to tell a story.
So. That game specifically allows for... I mean, it's
right.
Like...
Right, yeah.
You're
that game is
really
supposed to be terrible to everyone else. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean...
which is a much better story than... hey, let's all shake hands and be friends. And
right.
Boring.
Yeah.
I was going to develop that game.
Everybody's friends.
Yeah. Hmm. What else? What Chris and Suzanne, what gets you guys excited about game design?
I think one of the reasons we like we do game design together is we're so different, and we're both very creative people. When we first met, Chris's main focus was media arts, and mine was literature. And then game design, we kind of found our creative outlet in something that we both enjoy. And we're very different players, and we usually have opposite strategies. So when we're designing a game, it's good because we get to look at it from so many different angles, and that really, really helps us a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, having the two different perspectives really does help us out a lot. And what has ended up happening so far is I kind of will do, I'll like do some grunt work, and I'll like work really hard on this detail and that detail, and I'll go to Suzanne and she said, well, what about this brilliant idea? Why didn't you do that? Oh yeah, that is a brilliant idea. All right, I'm gonna go work on it again and show it to her, and she'll have another brilliant idea. You know, so it works out. The process, you know, the back and forth, it really is enjoyable for us.
And that's a really good point to have in the back and forth, because you and I have benefited a ton from that.
It's true, yeah.
You know, and especially because we talk it out on the show so many times that mm-hmm. man, the things that you, like you said, the brilliant ideas were, you know, some of my best ideas have come from Rob, and I think vice versa. I mean, you know, like themes and stuff like that, where we've thought of ideas, having that person outside of the box there really helps, you know, having that
even like you said, just like talking it out, like, I think, I don't know if I discussed it when I was, when we talked solo, but in software design they have this thing called rubber duck debugging. And the idea is you talk to the rubber duck on your deck, on your desk. Deck. I don't want you to and you read your code line for line to this duck, and you'll figure out the bug as you're reading this code because you think about it differently. And so just talking, like there's so many times I will pull up Google Chat and like, Matt Warden, are you on? I need to fix this game, and I start typing, and before I finish, like, never mind, I just fixed it. Because I, you know, trying to explain it to somebody, it was like, oh, that was really dumb. I fixed it. Don't worry about it. So just talking, having somebody to talk to about it, I think is awesome.
Even if you don't have to listen to them.
Yeah. I mean, like, how many times have you fixed something just by explaining it to somebody? Yep. You're like, oh, well, that sounds really stupid. Why am I doing it that way?
I was working on a design recently. My wife and I were driving somewhere, and she was driving, and I had a laptop, and I was kind of just typing the rules, and I kept telling her something about the game, and she had no idea what the game was even about, and never really figured it out based on the things I was saying. But I'd say something, and she'd say something back that was semi-related, and suddenly I'm like, that's it, yeah, that's a great point. And she's like, what? Like, and then I'd type some more in. So that, yeah, talking it out definitely makes a difference.
Yeah, I talk to myself. I
talk to Rubber Duck, man.
Yeah, well, I do with Notepad. I just open up Notepad on the computer and just talk to myself in writing, and then I can always reference back to my notes later.
Exactly. Yeah. For me, blogging, like, just blogging about it, I fix a lot of things just by writing it. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to tell the story about how I don't like my game, and then halfway through the story, I'm like, oh, well, I just fixed it. I like it now.
You have the most bipolar blog entry ever.
It's true. I'm trying to be real, you know?
Can I ask a question?
Of course.
To the rest of you guys, game. We joked about all the money in game design, and a lot of us are probably doing this as a second or third or fourth job or whatever we're doing to in our side times. Where do you guys game design? I'm just curious because, like, you know, we kind of sort of, as we were getting started, there were several other companies in our hometown, and we talked about, like, maybe sharing, like, a conference room, office room somewhere, so we had a place to go and sharing the rent, and everybody kind of didn't really work, and, you know, and then I'm married with kids, and so, like, my house is kind of out for late night meetings or daytime meetings with the kids, and, you know, they're younger, and they have roommates in and out and things, and so we end up hosting a lot of bar nights. I'm a bartender, and we host a lot of, end up having business meetings, like in the corner booth, like, you know, trying to ignore waitresses and not tell them what we're doing, and we're frantically scribbling on index cards and yelling at each other, you know. But where do you guys game design? Where does it happen physically for you guys?
At work, you got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good. Okay. Yeah. It's funny. In my previous job, I would literally there was nothing to do, and then the company closed with Shane.
Shocker.
So I mean, literally for like 6 hours a day, I would game, and it was great because when I'm at home and I'm in my office trying to game design, it's tough because there's so many distractions. There's so many things I could do, but when I'm at work, the only other option was work. So I was like, I guess I'll game design, and then you know, and it just was very easy to get creative. Now I have a new job, and I work a lot at that job. So
yeah, we're setting a very bad example. Don't game design at work.
You kind of have to game design in that moment that it hits
you. Exactly.
You know? I always talk about on the show, I keep a journal, and you know, whenever I get an idea, I write it down right then, because you know, every couple weeks or every month or so, I'll go through and look back, and I'm like, that's a great idea. I forgot that I had that idea. You know, and so that's, I think sometimes you just have to game design wherever you can.
That's it, everywhere, right?
Yep.
Like, I mean, never hits you. But the idea is, that's the easy part, right? Like, and if it was easy to get from idea to shelf, like,
we'd all have coordinated so much better.
And like, when you first start, you don't think it's going to be hard, right?
No, because the ideas are so easy, right? So you're like, oh, this is going to be easy. And you're like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
This doesn't work.
Making it playable.
Well, I like the puzzling aspect of it. As far as, I have a game that I worked on for a year, and I'm much more of a hobby designer. Like, I really don't have grand aspirations of having my game on every shelf, ever. So, to me, I'm honestly just like the repeat failure that I kind of enjoy. Because it's, oh, this doesn't work, this doesn't work, this doesn't work. Oh, but now it's kind of clicking, it's coming together, and I enjoy that.
Yeah.
And for me, in my job, I have a lot of downtime, because I'm either working, I'm a flight attendant, or I'm at a hotel, usually in an airport waiting for a plane, you know, so I have a lot of downtime where I have no distractions, the kids aren't with me, so I'm sitting there in my hotel room thinking of games or thinking of problems or fixes to the problems.
Yeah, I must kind of agree with the have a job that you're doing something physical and you don't really need to think too much about it, because then you can think on your game design. Yeah, like, I'm a barista and I just make coffee for a lot of people, but realistically I'm just like pumping them out, and in the downtime and during the coffee making process I can still think about it, like, oh yeah, I still want to figure out that thing before I come home so I can tackle it properly. Definitely. You know, and
that is a good like physical task. Like, I'll go mow the lawn if I'm stuck on a game, and just riding the lawnmower thinking, like, and you got that, you know, that time to.
I have a very long commute. It's about 2 hours each way. The days that I have to go to the office. Yeah, only 3 days a week, so it's not as bad as it could be. But that time, that's kind of the biggest block of time that I actually have to kind of think through particular problems in a design.
All right, I'm going to say it, and I know we're all thinking it. Shower or toilet. It's the same place. We all do it. I have literally written in the steam on the tiles in the bathroom, taking a shower, like, I gotta write this down. And then, like, trying to write in the steam and draw pictures and then get my camera, like, I gotta take a picture of that. Oh, yeah. Never works.
I'm an overnight waiter at this little 10-seater diner in the town that we're from, and it's right in the center of all the bars downtown, and so when all the bars close, it gets insane. And I actually find that when I am just knee-deep in drunk college students, that is actually one of the best times for me to come up with, because I'm just so in the zone of I just have to work, and it's just muscle memory and go through it and feed them all what they want, that I'm not really thinking about it anymore, but I'm busy and running around. And for whatever reason, that's when these ideas float up. And then the next morning, I've got to call him because I'm like, man, I was crazy last night. And then I came up with this idea, and here we go.
It's almost like an escape from whatever. Like, you're working so hard, you're like, and you just escape. And then your brain just puts these things together. I do that a lot. I'll intentionally go do something.
Yeah.
I cut the grass.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting to hear you guys' perspective that you design it as a team. Because I think a lot of the rest of us are kind of solo with this, and you know, I feel like I do my best designing when I realize, oh crap, we've got to record a show tomorrow, and I need to pitch a game, and I need to hurry up and bang something out here so I have something to talk about. And it seems to almost always start under like that kind of pressure. I just need to put something stupid together so I can talk for 20 minutes about it, and then I get interested and get excited about it. Next thing I know, I should have gone to bed 2 hours ago. So. The pressure for me.
Ours is very rapid fire back and forth, and I don't think it would work if it weren't for both of us being there talking, because one of us will come in with an idea and it's this sort of, well, I don't like that at all, but this is what I like about it, you know, and then the rest of it's just worthless and just boom, 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 as quick as you can talk, and eventually we stumble on sort of a happy medium where none of the mechanics we started with even exist anymore, but we have something we like, and that's where all our good products
are. If you had a visual representation of like the game idea, it would be like, I walk in with this model, like this Fabergé model of like this carefully designed, I'm really nervous about it, but I'm going to show you this design, and then he's like and then he's like, this is what I would do, and then I'm like, no, I'm going to do this, and he's like, no, I'm going to do this, and it just the visual representation of that, and then the end result is something we both go, okay, like we found where the initial thrust and playability and some game design ideas have all come to kind of mesh, and I think there's also such a great respect there. I mean, I know you guys say you work and come from opposite angles a lot on your side of things, and so from us it's not even opposite angles as much as he has like the gaming pedigree and I'm new, so I have the flippant ideas and he kind of blunts them down with the ideas of this is what's been done before and you're too idiotic to realize it's been done. And I go, oh, and that's when he sends me home with homework. He's like, here, go play this. And I'm like, oh, right, okay. And then we rebuild, you know? And so it's been a really great teamwork kind of effort thing. I think the products we're working on and the one we've produced is actually better for it because of that.
Yeah. That makes me think of a subject that I found kind of fascinating to experience for myself, and that's the process of the way an idea evolves or when you iterate on that, and how something that can start out as one project can eventually become a completely different thing. And you know, and I don't, I wonder if you guys have any thoughts on how that happens. Is it deliberate? Is it organic? How much of that is just natural flow, and how much of that is real tough decision making?
And I'm sure it can vary from project to project, but I don't know if you have any experience with that.
It does. And I think that it's like a very... So I blog, you know, and a lot of people ask me a lot of questions, like, hey, I got this game that I've been working on for 10 years, and it's the only game I've ever worked on, and it's now in its 75th iteration. Like, dude, you just need to stop. Just put it on paper and stop. Work on something else, because you're never going to stop working on that game ever. Ever. You're just always going to have, oh, I can change all that, and then it's going to happen. At some point, you just got to just pause and work on something else, because you just got to have that, like you were talking about earlier, with having, like, failure. Failure leads to eventual success, because you know that you tried this mechanic once and it didn't work, and you tried this mechanic once and it didn't work, and this mechanic once, and then some point in the future you're like, hey, that mechanic would work perfect for this. I got it wrong the last time, but this time it's perfect.
Right.
And you have this toolbox of stuff that didn't work. And it's, so I think it's kind of a natural thing, and I've always told those people, like, just stop. Just go work on something else. Mm-hmm. But I've been working on this forever. I'm sorry. Pick a new project.
Just
stop. Put it on paper and just quit. And go do something else for a while, and it'll just happen. You'll just figure it out.
Yeah.
But I'm guilty, too. We're all guilty. I like make sweeping changes that are, you know. So I don't have a co-designer or anything like that. But I this particular game I blogged about, I literally wrote like all of my successes and all of my failures. And I had this guy who followed me, and one day he's like, whatever happened to that game? And I'm like, it's terrible, I hate it. I just want to throw it away, I'm done with it. And I was like, I'm just going to change everything about it. And he's like, well, just don't do that yet. And I'm like, no, it's just terrible. I'm going to just completely erase it and start over. And he's like, how about I just take it and like look at it myself? And he had never done game design, and I'm like, go for it, bro. And he came back like 3 months later, and it was like, holy crap. This is a pretty good game.
It wasn't that much different.
And it was very not different at all. Like, you know, and it was like, wow, you're right. I didn't need to do all that. So, I don't know. At some point, you're just going to stop.
Do you have any of those projects that you've sort of spent a lot of time with and you kind of can't let it go, but
yeah,
it's not ready?
Oh, yeah.
That you really love, though.
Yeah.
That you really want to finish.
Exactly, I do. Yeah. I have one that started on this show 8 months ago, and I'm just now getting to a point where I'm playtesting it. Like, I just can't let it go.
If you wait till a game is 100% finished, it'll never be finished.
You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See what I can do with beer.
Nice. Brilliant. Nice.
But it's true, right? I mean, you know, what game out there, it's every person in the world like love.
Right.
None.
Right.
Right? Like even the, you know, number one game on BGG or whatever, you know, Monopoly, the most popular game in the world, is the most unpopular game in the world with the alpha gamers. So
alpha
you gotta get it to a point where your target audience is having fun, right? Like,
yeah.
You can get near 100% of your target audience having fun with it, then it's ready. And then you just gotta go with it.
I'm starting that podcast tomorrow, Jason. Alpha Gamers.
The Alpha Gamers podcast. You should trademark that, AJ, before
I was
Chevy
gonna say, if every game was perfect, there wouldn't be house rules.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And some of the fun is adding that house rule in, saying, you know what, this doesn't work for me personally, so we're gonna tweak it, do this.
Sure.
And
could you really release an expansion to a perfect game? I mean,
yeah.
Right. Why?
Yeah. You could, but it would ruin it.
Right.
Yeah.
Just make it suck.
The perfect expansion.
Yeah.
And then the third expansion fixes all the
problems.
Oh,
yeah. Now it's better.
It's like a movie sequels where the first one's awesome and the second one just sucks and the third one kind of brings it back up.
Back to the future.
Yeah. Right just level, like yeah.
All right, so we're running low on time here. I want to go around the room. We're just at the end of day one of Gen Con. I want to know, what are you guys looking forward to doing here before the end of the event?
I mean, this is it, right? Like, being with industry people.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, this is the best industry as far as just collaboration and, like, everyone wants to help each other. Like, if I walked up to a guy that and we had competing games, like, we'd probably help each other. Like,
exactly.
With each other's games. Like, that's what I love. So just being with friends and being with people. And, I mean, I turned around to Chevy on the way over here. Like, this is awesome. Like, I wish every day could be Gen Con. Like, this is great.
You know what? I'm going to be honest. And this isn't being sappy. Like, I'm not trying to suck up or anything for future airtime. I have a really huge session with a really big publisher who is really into one of my games on Saturday. I'm more excited about tomorrow's panel than I am Saturday.
Aww.
Like, seriously.
Man, thank God you didn't say some of the words on that.
No, just... I get to spend another hour with Jason. Just talking to people about game design, especially first-time designers who have, because they all have these questions, and they're all the same question, but I don't care. It's awesome. Like, dude, this game, I got this game, what do I do? And I'm like, send it off to somebody who's not your friend.
Right?
You know?
Yeah.
Mail it away somewhere to somebody who hates you and let them play it.
Right.
You know, it's just, I'm way more excited about that than I am this meeting that I have with this huge publisher. Like, I really am. Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah, that definitely what makes Gen Con the best experience is this. Last night when Rob and I commented together, we were hanging out with several of you guys that are in this room here at the JW. Like, this is just so great. Like, yeah. You know, talking to everyone about design and stuff. And we get to do that more than a lot of designers do because of the show.
Right.
Yet, it still is, you know, it's awesome. And it's especially meeting people that you haven't, you know, ever met in person. You know, getting to chat with them about
with
games
them.
And stuff. You know, work with them on stuff. Yeah. That's awesome.
Getting to snuggle with random strangers.
We got to meet for the first time yesterday, Neil Roberts.
Yeah.
Who's been a fan of the show for a long time. We've talked to you.
Yeah.
And we actually got to meet him. And yeah, so
he's awesome.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
It really is one of the joys for us specifically about the show is coming to Gen Con and meeting people that we've been talking to on Twitter and email and stuff so much, and new friends and old that's really what gets me excited about Gen Con. Also buying games.
But, yeah. Yeah, game store's cool.
Who's bought anything?
Hold on.
What do we buy?
Oh, hey, we got a latecomer.
Yeah, sorry, we literally got lost in the sky bridges.
It's really easy to do.
Yeah, we end up in the mall. So.
So to wrap up.
Introduce yourselves to the listeners, please.
Hi, Farrell from Mythic Slant Press with Kristen and Patrick.
So,
hi.
Welcome, guys.
We're incapable of navigating sky bridges.
That's okay. There's a lot of them around here.
Yes.
Oh, that's probably broken. That's cool. And you guys are doing the Havoc and Hijinks game right now, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we are.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, cool. Cool.
Well, oh, you just got funded, right?
We did. We just
got
funded.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, during our first demo, I was like, we're doing the demo, and I see Twitter. I'm like, what? Oh, yay!
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Find out from our backers.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, cool. Well, we were just talking about what kind of we like most about Gen Con, why we keep coming back, and you know, what we look forward to. This is only the end of day one here. So, I mean, what are you still looking forward to doing and seeing, experiencing, or what's your favorite part of what's going to happen this weekend? What do you guys think?
Well, this is our first Gen Con, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, okay. We've never been to Gen Con, so we've done Dragon Con a lot and PAX East, that sort of thing. So, really, I just want to, you know, like, a lot of people in this room, I just want to find a table somewhere and play your games. That's what, because we bought no tickets for anything.
Okay.
Like, I have no tickets for anything, so I'm just like, I know enough people on Twitter to play games, we're all right.
Yeah, okay.
That's been the plan.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah, great. All right, cool. Well,
Well, I just want to say that it's also my first experience at any con, but I'm really looking forward to, like, just meeting all you guys and, like, checking it out. And, like, we arrived today after a 15-hour, like, bus ride of, like, like, terror. But anyways, yeah, it's going to be great. And, yeah.
So we do this every day, but it's just in 140 characters on Twitter. So
yeah.
If you're on Twitter, that's where, you know.
We do this every day.
Yeah.
Twitter
is not nearly as cool, but
a whole lot less snuggling.
It has to hold us over until the next year.
Usually, quite a bit more zings are being passed.
Yeah, a lot more insults over Twitter.
I feel like we're meaner to each other on Twitter.
Well, once the mics get turned off, we'll all be nasty.
Yeah. Wait till they turn up, and then we talk.
Cool. Twitter's the best ever, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. So if you're not on Twitter, get on Twitter. That's a message to listeners. Okay, well, hey, we are out of time. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, we will find out the link to this on Twitter. Oh, wait, how are you?
I just tweeted about this show.
Oh, so did I. There you go. All right, well, we are out of time here because I know some of us have places to be at 9 o'clock. So I want to thank everybody once again for coming and hanging out with us. We'll be doing this again tomorrow night, so if you guys who came a little late, maybe we can try again tomorrow, depending on schedule.
We'll make it.
It'll be easier to find out. We know how to get here now.
Yeah.
There was a closer sky bridge the whole time.
You can actually walk outside, it's even closer.
Yeah. No.
Yeah,
that would involve us going outside. That's not allowed.
No, fair enough. Okay, so, and thank you to everybody for listening, and tune in again soon, because we'll have another one of these posting in the near future, I guess.
That's the plan. Anyway.
Why are you looking at me?
I don't know. If you guys show up again. All right. Good night, everybody. I can figure out how to stop this.
I feel like you haven't done this before.
Shut up.
It's a new program.
Yeah. Yeah.